it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, good Wednesday evening, everybody. Welcome to The Porch. It is a VolQuest baseball podcast presented by my friends at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, and they can be your friends as well. If you got a problem, they'll find a solution for you. T and Trial Lawyers. If you have a need, pick up the phone for a free consultation. You can call the number at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185, or visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. This is The Porch. Got a lot to get into today as Tennessee is about to head down south to the Swamp in a rivalry series, rivalry renewed, and it's going to be Tennessee and Florida in the SEC East for the last time. Going to get into that with Luke Lipsius. He's coming up here in a matter of moments. Due to time restraints, short week. Also, I'm traveling here in a little bit down to Florida to cover this series. I had to get Luke earlier in the week. In fact, I got Luke on Monday, and so it was before the midweek loss, so I didn't get a chance to ask him about that. And he also talks about Jordan Beck a little bit, making his debut on Tuesday. So that's a couple of days ago, but the information's still good. Just wanted to get that out there because I'll touch base on the midweek loss here. But huge opportunity for Tennessee. In fact, I was texting Luke on Tuesday night, and I was like, man, we recorded early and they might lose this game. And he said, yeah, well, you can't mess with the mojo. We lost a midweek game, two midweek games last year, lost a midweek game to Tennessee Tech back in 2022. And last year you went to Omaha, right? So kind of laughing about it. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just baseball, right? I mean, sure, it's frustrating. You never want to lose. What you got from the bullpen was not great in a midweek game. And again, it's frustrating, but it's not the end of the world. It's baseball, to be completely honest with you. What worries me, not really worries, but what was very disappointing to me from Tuesday's game was Marcus Phillips giving up three runs in two innings, was Andrew Binkie giving up two runs an inning and a third, was Matthew Dallas, who I thought looked better, but still ended up getting charged for two runs in an inning and a third. Nate Snead, I don't think it was a huge bad deal at all that he pitched on Tuesday, but I would still rather not see Nate Snead pitch on Tuesday. Just my opinion. I mean, you have Florida at the time that he pitched, you had Florida in less than 48 hours. What if you need somebody to come in and get you a six out save in game one? I understand it's going to be Stom and then Causey, but what if that doesn't work in game one and you want to go to Snead? I mean, I'm sure he's still available. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, he throws 16 pitches, which is not a lot, but he exerted himself on Tuesday throwing there in the back end of that midweek game. Just not the biggest fan, but pitching was disappointing in the midweek game. But again, it is not the end of the world. It does not mean that Tennessee is all of a sudden a bad baseball team. It's not embarrassing. It does not mean this coaching staff is atrocious. It's literally the sport of baseball. It happens. You don't want it to happen, but it happens. And Lipscomb, having a down year, for sure. I'm not trying to sugarcoat this. I mean, entering the game yesterday, they were, I think, 12-11 in ASUN play. I mean, they're having a down. They were 15-27. They're having a down year. This team was literally in. I was getting cracked up at some of the comments. Not that I really saw on the GQ, but more or less I saw on Twitter. People were like, oh, it's so embarrassing losing to such a crap Lipscomb team, such a crap team. I was like, do you not remember Lipscomb was literally in the same regional as you last year at Clemson, right? Tennessee didn't play Lipscomb, but it was Charlotte, Lipscomb, Clemson, and Tennessee. Lipscomb was literally in the same regional as you last year. So it's a team that was picked preseason number one to win this conference. It's got a lot of talent. And I mean, gosh, that leadoff man for them, good Lord. Two homers, three extra base hits, scored on a wild pitch. He's a senior. Already checked, guys. He's a senior. He's a senior. So can't bring him over here in the offseason, at least to my understanding. And I lose track about COVID years, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. But end of the day, you don't want to lose, but it's part of it sometimes. Tennessee lost to Boston College last year in midweek. Tennessee lost to Tennessee Tech last year in midweek. Need to, as Sam Smith would say, need to stay away from the purple teams in state. I would agree with that. Just kind of one of those things. Now, also it's important to keep in mind, okay, it's a midweek game. Tennessee goes in with a plan to throw, you know, Loy for a couple innings, Phillips a couple innings, Binky, Dallas, you know, J.J. Garcia got in there. You go in with a plan to get a lot of guys some work. If this was a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, you're going out there with Stom to Causey, Beam to Xander to Snead. I mean, it's very different. Midweek games, a lot of times, not real baseball, in my opinion. But this loss is not going to hurt Tennessee because you're not trying to play your rear ends off for a regional like you were last year. All right, end of the day is what it is. Tennessee loses to Lipscomb 9-6, allows 4 home runs, and that was not great in the ball game. It's unfortunate for Phillips, who was really pitching well here of late. Binky, that's his second bad outing in his last 2 appearances. Feels like he's kind of taken a few steps back, which is not great, because you need Phillips, Binky, and even Loy, in my opinion. You need those guys to pitch in the SEC tournament, and you need those guys to pitch in a regional play, especially if you lose a game. So they got to continue to come along a little bit. Tuesday midweek loss does not mean that Tennessee is going on some no momentum into the swamp. Tennessee's won 6 straight SEC series. Tennessee's coming off an SEC series sweep against Missouri. Trying to do it in different ways. Now, it'd be nice if the power would return the lineup a little bit. On Tuesday, Tennessee had 10 hits. Tennessee had 4 doubles and 1 home run. It was in jeopardy of going 3 straight games without a home run, but Billy Amick's solo shot in the 9th inning kind of erased that. So it's not like Tennessee wasn't hitting the ball on Tuesday, but like it's been a bit of a power outage in the home run department a little bit, dating back to games 2 and 3 against the Tigers. So it's going to be hot, going to be steamy a little bit. You hope the power returns for the University of Tennessee coming up this weekend down in Florida, and I will preview who the Gators are here in just a moment. Now, I do think it's interesting. I have the stats pulled up a little bit. Tennessee was leading the nation in home runs heading into last weekend. Tennessee's still leading all power conferences in home runs, with Georgia about 13 back or 12 back in third place overall. But Tennessee's no longer leading the nation in home runs. That is Austin Peay, who on Tuesday night absolutely destroyed Alabama A&M. Yeah, Tennessee destroyed Alabama A&M too. You know, midweek games, you know, the run rules, all that type of stuff. 35-1 in 7 innings. 35-1 in 7 innings. They blasted 6 home runs, and now Austin Peay leads Tennessee in the home run chase by 6 home runs. So that's kind of where that thing stands right now. But you know, it won't take long at all for Tennessee to jump right back, pull even, and maybe even take a lead, because we've seen this offense and what it's capable of for sure. But we'll see if the power kind of returns back. You'd love for it to return in the swamp and you know, help Tennessee carry Tennessee to what should be the 7th straight series win, but it's not going to be easy. Like I wrote about in 3-2-1, tons of talent on that Florida team, a team that has experienced a whole lot of success throughout their time, but I'll get into that here in a moment. A lot of you guys are asking about A.J. Russell. I dropped a note on the board last weekend. I dropped a section of it and the 3-2-1. If you didn't catch either any of those, A.J. Russell threw a bullpen on Monday, going to throw again later in the week. Going to face Tennessee hitters live and practice sessions over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll see when he's getting back. I would say that the earliest that you will see him could be the Vanderbilt series, but it might even be after that against South Carolina or the SEC tournament. Again, Tennessee is being very cautious with him. Tennessee is being very deliberate and not ruining his arm. A lot of people kind of speculated, well, at this point, what's even the point? I mean, I feel like they're just going to shut him down. No, absolutely not. Trying to win a national championship here. And he's your opening day starter. He will not be a starting pitcher throwing 100 pitches, 7-8 innings again this year. But barring a setback, he will pitch this year. It just will be in short stints. You know, closing a game, opening a game, middle relief behind a starter, big spot in the 7th inning, tying run at second base, one out. Let's bring in A.J. Russell, right? They can be very selective on how they want to use A.J. Russell, but that's kind of where he is right now. He's throwing bullpens again. He'll face Tennessee batters. That's kind of next in the progression. That should be sometime next week, but I'll double check. And he'll do that a couple of times and with plenty of rest in between. And then he'll be ready for game action. So I'll stand by. I think the earliest would be Vanderbilt series, but maybe even after that, in my opinion. Okay, so tell me about Florida. Well, Florida is a team that's got, again, a lot of talent, not a lot of wins. They are 23-21 on the season, 9-12 in SEC play. They are fighting their rear ends off to try and get to a regional play. They got three series left in SEC play, and they need at least five wins to feel like you've secured a regional spot. Six wins would be even better. So you're talking about going 5-4 or 6-3 over the last three series of SEC play. That's a tall task. We'll see what happens. Jack Caglione is one of the best players in the country. He's second in home runs. He's the best pitcher they have. I mean, he's going to be an issue this week, this weekend for sure. And I'll be intrigued to see kind of how Tennessee wants to throw to him. But first, the pitching for Florida. At the time of this recording, again, got to hit the road a little bit. At the time of this recording, I don't have the starters for Florida. I do have them for Tennessee. It's the same. Chris Stamos on Thursday, Drew Beam on Friday, Xander Seacrest on Sunday. But for Florida, we'll see what happens. Pierce Capala, he started last week, kind of trying to find an answer there in that Friday night role. He's 0-2, a 10.30 ERA. Brandon Neely, who was one of the better relief pitchers in all the country the last couple of years, he's been moved into the starting rotation. And then, of course, you got Jack Caglione pitching in Game 3, and he's kind of the stopper and done a really, really good job. We'll start with Caglione. He started all 10 weekends so far this season. One of his starts were rained out. He's impressed with a 5-0 record. He's got a team high 48 innings and a third pitch, 58 strikeouts. That's second best on the squad. But again, same story with Cags on the mound, at least. I mean, he's gotten better. He's matured. But he's also got control issues. We remember the game here in Knoxville last year. He's walked 35 guys on the season. He's logged at least four walks in five of his 10 starts this year. And he's hit three batters as well. So, yeah, command's going to be an issue. So if you be patient when you're going up against Caglione on the mound, I think that can do an awful lot for you. Brandon Neely, who will likely pitch in game two, he was a finalist for the Stopper of the Year Award last year. He was a member of USA Baseball along with Cags and Drew Beam. He was at his best last weekend against Arkansas, surrendered only one run over five innings and a third, six strikeouts, three hits. He got pommeled, though, for eight runs against Vanderbilt, five runs against South Carolina, five runs against Mississippi State. He's third on the squad with 51 strikeouts, but opponents are hitting 255 against him. Again, they moved him in from the bullpen to the starting rotation the third weekend of conference play because just don't have a whole lot of options. Pierce Capala, who you could see in game one, he has returned and he missed pretty much his first two years, due to injury. And he returned 3 weekends ago. He's pitched the past 3 weekends. The past two Fridays, he's made starts. But he's been roughed up a lot. Six innings pitched so far on the season as they're trying to stretch him out. He's given up seven runs off seven hits, struck out 10 batters, walked three. He managed only an inning and a third, an inning and two-thirds in his first two outings, was stretched out to three innings of one-run baseball and 58 pitches last weekend against Arkansas. So you would think that he would get the nod again in game one here against the Falls because his last outing was really solid. But overall, man, I mean, again, it's just it's not good starting pitching. Listen to this. Florida ranks last in the conference with a 6.21 ERA, tied for 11th in hits allowed, and next to last in walks. This is from Nick De La Torre, who covers Florida for Gators Online. He said on the pitching, Kevin O'Sullivan preaches first pitch strike and first two outs. It's a pillar of his program, and so much of the team jump on their fastballs early in counts. The staff just doesn't throw strikes, whether it's the starters or the bullpen. They're giving up an average of 13.97 walks and hits per game. So that's coming from the beat writer, the Eric Kane that covers Florida. Now he's a lot better at his job than I am, but just don't throw strikes. So there's opportunity there to get your offense back in gear. Power outage, let's have it lifted. Extra base hits and all that. There's going to be some opportunities there for sure. One note on Jack Caglione. Florida is 6-1 in SEC play when he pitches. Florida is 3-11 in SEC play in games where he doesn't pitch. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. The offense, again, much like the pitching, it's nothing to write home about. 92 home runs on the season. That's third in the SEC. They live and die on the home run ball. But the Gators are 9th in the average. They are 13th in OBP. They're 10th in runs. They're 9th in RBI. 3rd in strikeouts at the plate. They don't run an awful lot. Again, outside of two guys, the Florida offense has been very underwhelming. Jack Caglione, of course, he's 2nd in the order. Plays first base and pitches, or DHs. He's like Shohei, right? So when he pitches and he's done on the mound, he'll stay in and hit. It's the Shohei rule. 2nd in the country behind Charlie Condon with 26 home runs. Leads the Gators with a .404 batting average. Leads the way with 53 runs batted in, 50 runs scored, 69 hits, 28 walks. He is really good, and Tennessee's going to have to be very cautious in how they kind of want to attack him. Nobody on base, I'll throw to him. Tying run at 2nd, I would stay away. Let's just be smart about things right here. Ty Evans, leadoff man, right fielder. He's a good player. 2nd on the team with a .335 batting average, 42 starts. He's the only other Gator outside of Jack Caglione who is hitting over .300 on the season. Whew. 11 home runs, 37 ribbies, 42 runs scored. He struck out 50 times, though, and walked 18 times. In fact, of the 9 players who have garnered the most at-bats for Florida's offense this year, 6 of them have registered at least 35 strikeouts. 4 have struck out over 50 times. A team that is not very disciplined at the plate. But watch for Cags. Watch for Ty Evans. Outside of those two guys in this lineup, offensively, it's really not been anything to write home about. But again, it's Tennessee and Florida. Nothing's going to be easy. Nothing's going to be easy. It is a rivalry series for sure. And Tennessee's going to have to earn this one for sure. Tennessee's going to have to earn it. I'll be down there in Gainesville this weekend, and I'll bring you coverage over at VolQuest.com. Looking forward to that. Also looking forward to hearing comments from Luke Lipsius, who's joining the Porch, my co-host here on the Porch Podcast, presented by our friends over at Exterior. Nope, wrong podcast. Over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let me find a solution for you. That's T&T Lawyers. Criminal defense, family law, and personal injury. That's what they specialize in, as examples of which can be like DUI, homicide, assault, car wrecks, accidents, injuries, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights. They have over 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts in Northeast Tennessee. Practicing primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas, the firm has won multiple awards and have attorneys who are rated by super lawyers and real Mid-South trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need a divorce, help with custody of your children, or been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. Go see them in person, 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee. Go K-Meds, 423-245-4185. That's that free consultation, 423-245-4185, or visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. They're good people over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Luke, it was Thursday, and it was a whole lot of the same for Tennessee. 10-1, game one victory. Causey was shoving. Stom got the start, and open he did well. Tennessee scored 10 runs off 6 home runs. And so I was like, okay, this is Tennessee baseball. And then you win games 2 and 3 by a score of 3-2, combined 2 runs in the win. Doesn't matter how you get them, a win's a win. I don't care who you're playing in this league. It's all tough. But another series sweep, the fourth of the season, second in the SEC play, a really good weekend for Tennessee.
Yeah, you said it. You know, we come out huge on Thursday, and that's such a funny game because the only runs scored were off of homers, which, yeah. I mean, it's what you come to see when you come to a game at Lindsey Nelson. But it's also one of those things where, you know, you expect a big bounce back. We've seen it before. They come out hot on Friday. And it come out hot on Saturday again. Good thing Beam had his good stuff on Saturday because, I mean, a 3-2 win against, you know, where we're going to say a fairly talented Missouri team is good. And it's the SEC. Winning close ones is going to help down the line, which is really what you want to see. Now, would I have liked to see a couple more blowouts? Yes, of course. Maybe see some more guys get some innings. Yes, of course. But I think it's good that we saw close games towards the back end of the weekend, just so you can put yourselves in those situations. Because as the SEC tournament is right around the corner, which, by the way, Kentucky is helping us out big time and losing to South Carolina this weekend. Yeah. Super close race. Going to be really fun down to the wire. Overall, good weekend. You know, it's weird to see the middle of the lineup struggle, you know, besides Amick and Simo. You know, you got Berg and KT, Dreiling not doing too well this weekend. But other than that, you know, I say overall it's a positive and a lot of room to grow as we head towards this postseason push.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Again, I've said it a couple times this year, and Tony said it. Like, when you can find different ways to win ball games, that's only going to – and you just said it a moment ago. It's only going to help you in, mm-hmm. you know, tournament play, regional play, all that type of stuff. And maybe I'm just an old man. I watch too much Braves baseball, National League growing up. But, yeah, I mean, everybody loves to watch those 10-1 wins, and we're spoiled here, you know, watching Tennessee. But something just poetic and sweet, in my opinion, about winning – a hard-fought baseball game, 3-2. You know, Kirby coming on, 6 huge outs there to preserve mm-hmm. the series sweep. And Kirby's been phenomenal, don't get me wrong, but like when Tony elected to go for him in that situation, I'm like, leave Combs in there. Like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? But again, his move is better than mine. And Kobe was fantastic, Kirby was fantastic. He's not Kobe. Like winning 3-2 in back-to-back games, man, that's just, I just feel like that's sweet. That's a good baseball victory. It's hard-earned.
Yeah, 100%. And it makes those situations where you could have gotten done and didn't, or you could have gotten done and did, stand out even more. Like, in both of those games, it was literally a 2-run single that I think won it both times, or at least got us ahead both times. So it's little plays like that. And, you know, when you're hitting balls out of the yard, you don't appreciate them as more. But I know that on the video that they're probably watching today, they're looking at those plays. They're looking at the plays where they didn't convert. They're saying, hey, here's what we need to do when we do face, you know, a plus caliber team. Because let's face it, if we hit like we did this weekend, we're not going to win a series against, you know, an Arkansas, Vandy. I know we don't play Arkansas, but just looking ahead to the future. So it's one of those things where you have a lot to learn in these series. And also, you know, we haven't had a lot or we have had some grinder games, but it's good to see some down the stretch, and especially when you're not expecting it against a team. You get humbled a little bit, showing that they came out and they pitched really well. They play pretty good defense. But it's also one of those games where, you know, we've been in this situation where even though, like, we're not scoring a lot, it almost feels like it's hard that we're going to lose this game just because, you know, they don't have the best offense. We have some really good guys on the bump. But, yeah, like you said, man, those close games are really, really good for character building, and it's really good for that video review on Mondays. Also, I will say Sunday, Missouri could have beat us by, like, 3 runs.
But I was about to ask you, so, like,
dude,
we've talked about base running and some mm-hmm. of the issues of Tennessee over the years. And like your team, it didn't matter because y'all were going to score 15 runs. And, you know, points of time last year, like it was more glaring. Tennessee's been a good base running team for the most part this year. But I wrote in my column after the game, like, with all due respect, I've seen some bad base running in this park. That was about the sorriest display of base running Saturday, too. I mean, what mm-hmm. is Missouri doing, man?
I mean, it's a younger team, but like still, you know how to play baseball, and they were literally just running themselves into outs. Like, I don't know who you have to talk to or like what their practice is going to look like this week, but I wrote a note. I said, base running is going to be the difference. And I think they ran themselves into like four or five outs in situations where they could have scored a bunch of runs. So I know maybe who knows, maybe they didn't want to win the series. They didn't want to win a game, but you know, either way, it's, you hate to see teams beat themselves. You know, you want to see Tennessee like beat the team, but in this case on Sunday specifically, Missouri beat themselves. And you know, it's something that even we can learn from. I'm sure, you know, V and E and them when it's going down is like, hey, don't do that. So yeah. It's one of those things where you're happy it's happening to the team against you. But again, you can take it as what you want, you know, a learning experience or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have no issues about the Tennessee offense. It's going to be just fine, even though it was kind of quiet the last two games. But bullpen continues to step up. And, you know, defense, along with those base running issues, the defense was great. Burke, that play of the play with Stark was good. You had KT turning double play from, you know, a 9-3 double play. You had Cal throwing behind the runner, bases loaded, throwing behind the runner, picking him off at first. I mean, again, Missouri's just so dumb in that regard. But defense stood out. And if not for an errant throw from Simo to home in game three, could have been even better and kind of protected Xander's line a little bit more. But I thought the defense overall played pretty well. Dean Curley made a leaping catch. Thought the defense was on display this weekend.
Yeah, defense been doing what they've been doing the whole year. I think we're fielding at like a 980 clip or something last time I saw, which is, you know, it's tops in the nation. It's going to get you top 20 in the nation, whatever it is, which is where you want to be because, you know, good hitting teams can win, but great teams can play defense and pitch. And yeah. So when they used to say there's three things you can do. You can hit, you can pitch, you play defense. If you do two of those three better than the other team, you'll win ball games. That's what we saw. You know, we hit just a little bit better. We played a little bit better defense. And at times we pitched better than Missouri this weekend. That's why we won those ball games. But it's just one of those things that it gives the pitchers confidence knowing that they can work balls into the zone, you know, and don't have to go for strikeouts or kind of nibble when that defense is playing really well. And we've seen them play so well all year. There was one play in particular. I think it was a little short hop up the middle. Simo grabs it, steps on second, throws it to first. It's just like pretty plays like that. Really, really fundamentally sound plays. And then, of course, you know, Burke throwing it home. He's always been able to throw it. We finally got to see KT's cannon a little bit on that double play too. So it was all good defense. And it's just they've set the standard. So none of it's a surprise anymore. You know, last year we were surprised by almost routine plays, but this year it's like we expect you guys to make routine and then some.
Yeah, before that pickoff, the bases loaded pickoff, it was KT firing at home, and they didn't want to try him there. So I thought that was another highlight. Want to ask you this in terms of, like, I feel like I know baseball. I've watched them a whole lot, called it, you know, followed it and all that. But it wasn't until this year that I started to not devalue the starting role for a pitcher, but again, coming to grips like, hey, it's 27 outs. Get 27 outs. Doesn't matter how you get them. So like right now, as I, you know, throw the baton to you, like I'm not touching AJ Causey. There's so many people, and rightfully so, just saying, well, move him back. You know, start. He's pitching out of his mind. He probably earned that, but why change anything? I mean, if you got Stom going 6-8 outs, 9 outs, or what, or whoever, Dylan Loy maybe in regional play, let AJ Causey cook and do what he's doing because it's whoever gets 27 outs. It doesn't really matter about the first 15 or 18. I would leave Causey put, but he's returned to form and he's looked really good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You do, especially a guy like V who's so superstitious. He is not going to mess up what's been working, and neither would I. And it's one of those things where Stamos is technically a starter. You want to keep him in that comfortable routine, but also like, he's only throwing 40 pitches a game. He can come back on Sunday if needed. So, like, I think they're just setting themselves up in a really good position where they're still only burning two arms on Friday. Beam's going to go, you know, I mean, historically 7 innings around that, which means you're up burning probably only 2 on Saturday, which sets you up really well for a Sunday game. And it's funky that they went Kirby, you know, back to back days. But of course, I think he's shown that he could be, you know, a rubber arm guy. But again, like we've been setting up really well, not only in the pen, but with what we've doing with the starting pitchers. And of course, this whole, you know, starter opener, whatever is really working well for us. So I definitely would not mess it up in that sense.
And then again, you brought him up there. I mean, Drew Beam, even with experimenting a little, it's not really an experiment anymore on Sundays. I mean, Xander might not go five or six, but like Xander's a starter in my mind now, right?
Exactly.
Stom is an opener, but I mean, you're going to put Drew Beam out there and you know exactly what you're going to get, man. This is his ninth out of 11 starts that he's gone through five. Mm-hmm. I think the last four starts he's gone through six or something. I don't know. He is looking like Drew Beam of old, and those numbers starting to look really, really good. He's going to be easily a top two round draft pick coming up this summer.
Yeah, 100%. He's just pitching with so much confidence. Like he's ramming the fastball down the hitters' throats, and that's what he knows.
Velo was up last weekend too.
I know he's been up to what 97, 98 this year. Like he's throwing as hard as he ever has. He's got, I think it's a full five pitch mix now. He's got the cutter, the slurve, changeup, maybe a four pitch mix. Either way, he's everything's working for him, and it's the beam that you need that rock on Saturday, because that means all you have to do is win on Friday. You know, you got the series, and it kind of makes it better for the coaches, the team, everyone. And then, like you said, yeah, Xander's definitely more of a starter now, and he's been doing really well as of late. And then, of course, the one kind of hiccup is Snead has been getting hit a little bit lately, which is odd because the stuff still seems to be there, the location still seems to be there. So maybe it's just one of those pitcher funks that, you know, we saw with Beam, you know, we saw with Kazi. I think every pitcher goes through a funk at some point throughout the season, but it's one of those things, better to get out now and then be good for, you know, playoffs rather than start funking in playoffs.
Let me ask you this, man, before we get into Florida a little bit. I wrote a story earlier this week about Tennessee's home run hitting, and ironically, I was thinking about writing the story, and then they hit six on Thursday, mm-hmm. and I'm like, okay, I got to do it now. And then Saturday and Sunday, or Friday and Saturday, the Thursday-Saturday series are screwing with me. Yeah. The Friday-Saturday games, they don't hit any home runs. First time in back-to-back games this year that hasn't happened, so I'm like, okay, great. But I wrote that story on just the power and how it translates from weight room to the field and all that, mm-hmm. and I talked to Elander, and I talked to Q, and you know, they gave me some great stuff, but you know, I got a football background. I know the weights and the training for football and how it translates, but, you know, as a baseball player, kind of the emphasis in the off season or in the weight room, what did you work on to try to get as strong as you can in order to drive baseballs, you know, out of the park or to the gaps? Cause I mean, it's so much more than just squat and bench press.
Yeah, so a lot of what Tennessee trains, and I think what a lot of just baseball players in general train, is quick twitch. It's a lot of power movements, you know, not too many reps per se. You're just trying to drive or move weight as quickly as possible. With that being said, strength training is only going to give you so much. The way that I looked at strength training, like outside of just wanting to, you know, feel good, look good, was that this is going to give me the confidence to where I don't have to swing hard and balls are still going to fly out the yard. Because that's what you see, especially just with hitters in general. They get big because they think they have to muscle balls out of the park. When you're lifting, when you're staying strong, you're staying healthy, you get this feeling that, no, you know, I'm just going to flick the hands and balls are going to fly. So that's where I felt the weightlifting really came in. Because when it comes down to it, it's how your body moves. You know, you got Andre, who I think was a buck 80 in college or whatever it was, maybe 200. He's hitting, you know, 17 homers a year. And that's just because the swing plays, you know, it's all about path, how you move your body. But that strength training is going to get you, you know, maybe a couple more homers that hit off the end or whatever. But really, it just tells you that you can slow down, stay smooth, and trust that you are going to be strong enough to be able to hit those balls out without having to, you know, muscle up and try to swing as hard as you can.
Yeah, like one player that really comes to mind, and Tony mentioned him like a couple of weeks ago, like Dylan Dreiling. I look at Dylan Dreiling, mm-hmm. and like I don't think like big, strong guy. Not saying he's not. I'm just saying, like you look at KT, it's like that dude's got muscle. But like Tony even said, like he's put on so much strength this offseason, mm-hmm. and you can just tell at the plate because the ball is flying off the bat. Exactly. And not saying that he doesn't have quick twitch or, you know, quick hands or anything, but like Burke, he's a naturally big guy, but like he just puts the barrel out there and the ball go.
Exactly.
So it almost looks from afar like two different types of strength a little bit.
Oh, 100%. And Burke's kind of like, he's always had that, you know, like baby fat kind of figure, you know, where he's not like jacked. But again, that's another instance of he's got what, a 6'3 or 6'4 frame, and he knows how to move his body to where he can hit these 470-foot homers. But then you also got a guy like Dreiling, who, again, he has a really good swing and knows how to use his legs, but he's a dense person is what I like to call him. You know, like he's not the biggest, but he's just dense. Like there's a lot of power. I mean, you know, Amick's the same way. He's what, like 5'10", 5'11", and not like super big. But of course you see these giant homers and you're like, how does that happen? They're dense people. They focus on quick twitch so they can move the bat really fast through the zone. And then also their swings are just really, really developed for how young they are.
Speaking of Burke, man, he's been so great. He's still going to be an All-American. You know, he moved up on the draft risers from MLB Pipeline this past week, and along with, you know, five other balls and a bunch of signees as well. But obviously a rough weekend for him. You saw the streaks coming to an end. They had to come to an end sooner or later. But what did you see from Burke that maybe kind of added to his struggles over the course of the entire weekend? I think he had maybe two hits. He had a big RBI ground out in game two. Yeah. But overall, it looked like he was kind of tense up there.
Well, yeah, you know, and I don't know how you break a metal bat, but that's he did it. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, it's one of those things where it looked like he was swinging at pitches he just wasn't swinging at when he was doing well. Yeah. Maybe it's one of those things where, you know, you hit a ball hard right at someone, then you hit another ball hard right at someone, then you strike out, and then it's like, oh, frick, what am I going to do? The streak ends, and then you kind of carry it over to game two. He just looked a little out of sorts this weekend. And so it's good that he got a hit on Sunday. He had a big RBI too, and it's good to – we'll see what happens on Tuesday and see how he actually looks. But I just thought he looked, you know, out of sorts. I don't know. Maybe he's dealing with something outside. Maybe his girlfriend said, you know, you're ugly or something. I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things. You never know what's going on with someone, especially a baseball player, because they're not going to tell you. I think it's fine. You know, no one's going to worry about anything because he's had so much success that he can, you know, watch video on, that he can lean on. But it was weird seeing him just not looking as confident as he normally does.
Yeah. And, you know, baseball players go through slumps and baseball humbles you. And that doesn't mean he's a bad player. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to resort back to what he was last year. Mm-hmm. He's a great player. But yeah, it was kind of odd seeing him like that this weekend. When you played, did your wife, then girlfriend, ever tell you you were ugly? Did that affect your play?
No. Maybe she thought it a couple of times, but I don't think she ever actually told me that.
Look at Florida, man. First off, huge rivalry series. Mm-hmm. The last time you guys were down there, I believe, was 2022. And you guys swept. And, of course, swept, right? I remember game three, the Christian Scott catch was phenomenal.
Yep.
I remember it was Sewell, who started and pitched five innings of the SEC championship game against Florida. So what's it like playing Florida, that rivalry series? Then, of course, get into the two-way star, Caglione, who's I think when he pitches an SEC play, Florida is like 6-1, and then the record is really bad when he doesn't. He's hitting over 400. He's got 26 bombs. Just a really, really good player.
Yeah, so that the series itself, it has so much like hype around it. You know, it's almost like what's happened with us and LSU, except this is a SEC East rival. And it's been, as of late, you know, the past few years, they haven't been, you know, the historic Florida they haven't, but they've still been really good, you know, making trips in the postseason, all that good stuff. And then you see, you know, us playing in the SEC championship, but then us playing like close series, us winning a really, really fun Sunday in Florida, in 22. And then, you know, is the rivalry is revived, whatever you want to say. And it's just awesome to see because you got two giant programs that are going head to head, and playing down in the swamp is crazy, especially with that new stadium. That dirt plays the nicest that I think I've ever played on. So it'll be fun for them to do it. I'm sure they're going to bring out a really good crowd. But then, yeah, well, when we get into Florida, they're playing like a Florida team that we've seen before where they've got these guys, these big sluggers that aren't, you know, slugging as much as they should. They got, you know, plenty of talent in the bullpen, but they got a team, you know, 6-2 ERA or whatever it is. Like, there's just pitchers that aren't pitching that well. And then you got freaking Jesus of college baseball, you know, Shohei Ohtani, his little brother, and Jack Caglione, who it's, you know, they're going to watch his BP and he's going to hit like balls over whatever the scoreboard probably. And you know, he's going to get into a couple over the season. It's like playing Georgia with Condon. It's going to be someone who you're going to mark, but you just don't have to worry about, because I think that they as a team aren't as disciplined as they need to be in order to beat a team like Tennessee, who's been rocking and doing things right. And then, of course, when he pitches, it's going to be really tough. You know, he's a mid to upper 90s lefty. They're always going to be tough when they do that. Seems like he's got a lot more command this year than he had last year. So it's the guy that you kind of star on the lineup. But this year, I don't feel as worried about him as, you know, let's say last year, or as like another comparable team in Georgia with Condon. It's one of those things where I think that our guys, with how they've been playing, can beat that team regardless of what Caglione does.
Yeah, I mean, you play the game on the field, but like on paper, again, Florida's numbers are not good. They hit a lot of homers. They're like third or fourth in the nation in home runs. They hit a lot of homers, and Caglione is fantastic. But, you know, OBP, slugging, total bases, runs, average, ERA, you know, all that type. They're just middle of the road or towards the back, and that's why they're six in the SEC East. But still knowing that, you know, there's a lot of talent on that team, and they played Arkansas on the road so tough this past week. So they're playing better baseball. It's going to be at home, rivalry game. Tennessee's got to be ready for it. Out the door, I do want to tell you, I don't want to get you in trouble. Uh-oh. So if you don't want to answer it, you don't have to. But tell me about, again, that 2022 when you guys swept, and then I guess you went and took showers at the football stadium and you put on the helmets. Kind of give me the backstory on that.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, we swept. So that Sunday game, we were down like two or three going into the last inning when he ended up pulling ahead, and I think it was extras. I think we tied it in the ninth, and then we pulled ahead in extras, something like that. But it was a fantastic comeback on a Sunday where it's almost like, you know, we've been playing in the swamp. It's hot. Like, are we going to have, you know, what it takes to come back? And that was just kind of like, I think that season, that game, like, we knew we were good, but that game was like, holy moly, we're gritty as well. Like, this is crazy. But yeah, so we win. We're all super excited. And then, of course, you know, us being us and the dirt bags we were that year, we go into their football stadium to shower, and they had a bunch of stuff laying out. And so, of course, people are going to put on the helmets, take pictures, you know, while they have minimal clothing on and stuff. So good thing they got, you know, chest up. But it's one of those things. And it's not a super uncommon thing either, because you're not going to shower at the baseball stadium. That's where, you know, the home team showers.
Yeah.
And I just guess that they didn't have away showers in that new stadium. So yeah, of course we head over to the football stadium and then just have fun in the locker room. I think that's the second time that I've been a part of something like that. I think at Bama might've had helmets, or South Carolina or something. But yeah, it's actually not as uncommon as you think.
Yeah, as far as showering at the football stadium, like, Tennessee did that at Lexington a couple of weeks ago.
So yeah, exactly.
That's very common. I just remember, I don't know who was next to him, but I remember Kirby was the centerpiece.
Yeah.
And he had the helmet on. You saw that stash. Yeah. That's just in my mind right now. So, I don't know. That was fun. And I agree with you. I think everybody knew, like, you guys were so good that year. But, like, that game, it's like, oh, finding different ways to win. Digging down deep. And again, Christian Stock coming on, just like Ariel Antique was a defensive replacement. I mean, I love baseball. And that game kind of had a little bit of everything. So should be a good one, man. Tennessee and Florida, again, it's not going to be easy. And I'm intrigued to see how Tennessee does this weekend, looking to see if they can win seven straight SEC series. And don't look now, man, but you got Vanderbilt the next weekend and then back home against South Carolina, and that's it. And then you go on to postseason play.
Yeah, everything's going to get a little bit more heightened now, you know, especially we're pushing to win another outright SEC title. Florida's pushing just to, you know, probably going to make the tournament, but now they're pushing for that 15 to get them into a regional. So you got a lot of extra hype with postseason going in. It's what we love to see. Environment's going to start to get really, really awesome if they haven't been already. And is where you want to watch baseball. It's not only college, because it always means more, but now it's like, okay, we really got to go. So it's going to be a great season, a great series, a really hard fought series. I don't think Florida's going to give in. I think they're still salty. And then, of course, we're going to try to beat them like we usually do.
I got to ask real quick, Jordan Beck, getting the call up to the show, man.
Getting the call up Tuesday, everybody tune in. I think it's a late game. They're playing the Marlins. Or if you want to make the trek down to Miami, go ahead.
We just talked about it. We said he was going to be the next one a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Lipson's exactly. Back up weird, there how, and, weird how that works.
Yeah, weird how that works. All right, man. As always, dude, appreciate it. And we'll talk again next week.
Yeah, fantastic. Can't wait.
Great stuff as always from my co-host here on the porch, Luke Lipsius. A big one coming up this weekend, Tennessee at Florida. And I'll have coverage for you from the Swamp over at VolQuest.com all weekend long. Guys, can't thank you enough for being here. Appreciate you tuning in. Excited to see what Tennessee does this weekend. Let's see if the Volunteers can make it 7 straight SEC series wins. And, how do you take down an elephant? Well, what's that saying? How do you climb a mountain? One step at a time, right? Let's see what they can do on Thursday night, and we'll go from there. All right. Appreciate you guys for being here as always. Again, stay dialed in at the General's Quarters all weekend long for some notes as I'm down there in Gainesville. Big thanks to my friends Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being the sponsor of this show. And if you're going down to Gainesville, stay safe, and maybe I'll see you there. This is The Porch, a VolQuest.com baseball podcast.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.